Welcome to the SermonCoach.com podcast. I'm your host, Dean Wilson. As we always do, we're talking today with Dr. David Maines, the Executive Director of SermonCoach.com. It's our desire to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. David, you were telling me about a recent book you read and how that book has impacted your thinking about the church. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I can, and I'm still processing it, so it's probably a little early on. This is called Learner-Centered Teaching. I have a lot of friends who give me books and say, this is very influential, I think you would enjoy it. Sometimes I do, and sometimes I don't. This happens to be one that has made me really think a lot. She is a professor at a college, and she's basically saying that the lecture method of teaching doesn't accomplish as much as sometimes we think. Her premise is that it would be better if the teacher would involve the students more in not only the preparation, but also in even the evaluation of what is taught. Now, she's not saying there's no value to the teacher, but she basically says, and I transfer this over into the preaching side, the person who learns the most in the teaching process is the teacher. And sometimes the teacher even enjoys knowing what her role is, or his role, in her case, her role, that she has a certain position of power and that she's able to control how the people are to learn, and she sets all the agendas and everything. And in some ways, that's an ego boost to the teacher because they look like the expert. They look like the person who has all the answers. And when it's all done, there's a lot of information shared. But if you say, did people really learn? They didn't learn as much as they kind of sat under this individual. Anyway, I'm not sharing nearly as well what she talks about. But I thought to myself, I wonder if that transfers over to the whole area of preaching. And in my mind, I said, there's no question about that. The person who learns the most through the whole sermon preparation process is the one who's delivering the sermon. I'm not necessarily sure that that same amount of learning is being transferred through the sermon to the people. And what she says is that teachers need to involve the class more in setting the agenda, setting what's important, what it is we're trying to learn, giving different ways to learn that so you're involving the people. This whole thing put me to thinking quite a bit. And I look back on the time when I was pastoring, and I did some things that were really dumb, Dean, but I also did some things that were pretty good. And one of the things that I did, I would get the congregation to say, what is it you want me to talk about, rather than deciding what all the sermon series would be. And I would find usually that the things that I would even suggest were not what the people wanted to hear about. And then it would frustrate me, but when I would go my own way, they didn't like it as well as when I said, okay, let's go your way. I also found that if I involved people in the preparation of the sermon, not just, I mean, everybody involves people. You may involve Matthew Henry, you may involve Martin Luther. Pastors got volumes of books that they go to. So they're involving people one way or the other. I just happen to involve live people. And I would say, this is where I'm going. This is what I'm trying to teach. And they would say, you know, what you're trying to teach is not really what we necessarily want to learn. And so I say, well, what would you like to learn? Then they would tell me, and I would say, I'm not sure I can teach that. I'm not sure how to do that because I don't understand your world that much. And then they would say, well, let us work together on it. So it was this process of learning together. And then there was also, in my mind, something that, again, I stumbled on, and I don't know why I did, but every time I preached, I would give people opportunity to talk about what I preached in the next hour, and it would always be like what we would call a pastor's class, and you'd sit down, and you'd have maybe 10, 12 people. If there were more than that, I'd break it into another group, and my wife would take it, or another person on the staff would take it, and we would always talk about what it was that was shared, what was helpful, what was not helpful. So as I read this, I thought to myself, you know what? Some of the things I did weren't that bad. And some of those things really benefited not only the congregation, they benefited me because I didn't take the opinion that I know everything. You come to me, I will kind of deliver you from the mountain what you need to learn. But I involved them. And she's saying in the educational process, that's more helpful. I would agree with her. But I thought to myself, that's not happening that much in terms of the church and in the preparation of the teaching that is done either in the Sunday school class or in the pulpit. Because for the most part, I see ministers getting alone, studying hard, and then coming and delivering and growing greatly. Because, I mean, the word is affecting their lives, but it's not affecting the lives of the people that much.
Isn't there a sense, though, in which a teacher as an authority figure is needed for there to be effective teaching?
Mary Ellen Wehmer answers that. She's giving better answers. Maybe I should name the name of the book and then people can read the book. But she's talking again in the educational setting. It's learner-centered teaching. And she said there are certain things that students are not capable of choosing on their own because they don't have enough information or experience. I'm trying to think of an example. Well, one example would be, what would the textbook be? So she says, you're a college student, you come into my class, and I don't say you choose your own textbook. I choose the text. But she says, then there are other areas where you can give options, like you can say, you can write a paper if you want to, you can take a test if you want to, you can, you know, you choose which ones you want to do. Somebody asked, well, what if in your class a person does a paper and does a very good job, what do they do on the test day? And she says, they don't come. Because in the writing of that paper and the grade that I gave, that is as good a way to find out on my part whether they're learning or if they took a test. You know, they have the option what they want to do. But in a sense, she's trying to involve the student in what is going on. And in my mind, it's the same thing in the church. You're trying to involve the people of the church in what is going on. I don't think you can do that if you're in a congregation. I mean, if you're talking 100 people, you can't have 100 people help you every time. But I've found that as I would continually involve the people on a basis of different representatives every time, those people took incredible ownership in what I was doing. They were the ones who were saying to me, I'm praying for you. How's the sermon? How's our sermon going? They would say. Those very words meant that they were involved in what was going on. A lot of times they would say, you know what you said? You didn't know how to relate to my setting. Let me give you an illustration of what I'm talking about, how this relates to your sermon. Those were wonderful illustrations, you know. So somehow it was this working together. And if you ask whether I lost the role as authority figure, I don't think I did. I filled a whole new role that was friend. But also, I gained immense respect from those people in that I was vulnerable, but at the same time, they knew that in terms of Scripture, I had an expertise they didn't have. And, you know, I could do things they couldn't do. My problem was I wasn't an expert in terms of the worlds where they lived and what they wanted to learn. So that whole sharing was a beautiful thing. When I went into radio, I lost that congregation, which was tough, but I remember many times, in fact, almost without exception, when I was working on a broadcast, I would go to somebody, like I'd go somebody back in the phone room who took the orders for all the orders that were coming in, or maybe I'd go to see the guy at the other building across the street who had our warehouse, and I'd say, I'm working on a broadcast, this is what I'm doing. Now, Mark, does this relate to you at all in terms of your world? And then in a very short exchange, I could find out if it did. Some people were better at challenging me than others. I mean, some people, yeah, it's very good. They think they're supposed to because I'm the boss, you know. But I got to the place where we had like 50 employees, and I would go to them on a regular basis. They found that as an involvement. In fact, a lot of times the people didn't listen to the programs we did. But when it was the program that I had asked them questions about, then they tended to listen to it. So it was the involvement and my vulnerability that made the relationship better and made even me stronger in terms of what I was saying. Make sense?
It does. So relating this to the church, you're suggesting that pastors gather some folks to help them think through what they're going to be including in the sermon so that it relates to the individual's world where they're actually living day in and day out. Is that right?
Yeah, it's the hardest thing most ministers have is, how do I apply this to where my people live? And the reason that's hard is because we don't know what it's like to be a factory worker. We don't know what it's like to be the one who's the mail carrier. We don't know what it's like to, you know, when it's winter and Lon drives the snowplow. And how does what I'm talking about relate to his world? But they know what it's like. And they can tell you. And those illustrations really bring alive the message then. In my mind, it's not hard for a minister to exposit the Scripture. The big question is, having understood that principle, how does it relate to Ralph, whose world is very different from mine? Okay, now, that's not the only way you learn from these people. I, on a regular basis, and I think a lot of ministers do this, I would go and visit Sally, the school teacher, or I would just come and just say, I just want to see the class. So they let you stand in the back. But you get a better idea of where different people are. John, who was the architect who was working on a whole new building project. Jack, who was the finance guy for the Chicago School Board. I would go to them, and if they would say, yeah, I'd go to lunch, I'd say, first of all, I want to come and just show me where you work. Just want to meet some of the people. Tell me what it's like to work. And then when we go to lunch, I just keep asking questions about their work. Somehow I was trying to get into their world, but it's the same thing what this woman is talking about. It's learner-centered teaching as opposed to preacher-centered teaching. It's a tough one, but in the long run, it's a very freeing thing for the minister because you know what you're talking about much more. You know, you use your expertise and then relate it to the world in which people live.
Congregation-centered preaching, if we were to...
We should write the book, Dean.
Write the book from the perspective of the church. What I hear you saying is that a congregation should have input into the subject matter preached, the preparation...
Yeah, I don't think they normally do. Yeah, that would be true.
That's right.
What would you like to hear? I remember many times I thought, boy, that would be a great sermon series. I'll do that. Maybe take 3 or 4 Sundays. And then people would say, no, I'm not really interested in that. Oh, man. So you want me to teach what you're interested in instead of what I'm interested in, you know. But we live a different world. So, yeah, are you done with the sentence?
No, there's more to it. A congregation should have input into the subject matter preached, the preparation of the material,
okay,
and how it applies, plus the evaluation of what kind of impact it has on people's lives.
That's really good, Dean. Read the whole thing now straight because I was kind of processing as you were going through it, okay?
A congregation should have input into the subject matter preached, the preparation of the material, and how it applies, plus the evaluation of what kind of impact it has on those people's lives.
No, I think that's very good, and that's different from the old model that, I don't know how old it is, but you kind of get this feeling as a minister that you're supposed to get alone with the Lord, meet and pray. You know, and then you come out and kind of deliver the word from off the mount. It's kind of like Moses coming down with the commandments from Sinai. Now, here it is, what God says, which is not a bad model, but it could get a little bit removed from where people are.
If we think of Jesus, he was certainly with and involved in and relating to people all the time. So when he spoke, he knew because of this relationship that he had with people exactly what they needed to hear. Of course, he also was the Son of God, which, although I've known some pastors who think they have that kind of status, but he had a lot going for him. A major thing, Jesus certainly related to the people that he was talking to in a very intimate and personal way.
Yeah, very much. Yeah.
And Jesus engaged people a lot in dialogue. So here's an opportunity for a pastor to do that. We're talking about congregation-centered preaching. A congregation should have input into the subject matter preached, the preparation of the material and how it applies, plus the evaluation of what kind of impact it has on those people's lives.
I like it very much. Well said.
We're so glad you joined us for this time together. You found our sermoncoach.com podcast at our website, sermoncoach.com. That's sermon-coach.com. We invite you to browse through the rest of our website. We have lots of resources there to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. And we invite you to join us for our next sermoncoach.com podcast.